Hey folks, welcome back. This is the AMC Report. I'm Joaquin Flores. I'm here with creator and founder of AMC, Ryd Dawson. We're here back to talk about the 28 pages. Now, the last time we were together, we talked about the 28 pages. You said to us what this report was going to contain. You said what it wasn't going to contain. And more importantly, you told us about how the mainstream media was going to distort and lie and twist this thing. In fact, if I recall correctly, the most important things about this report had already been published elsewhere. Now, could you break it down for us? I think, before you get into this, that you've been vindicated. The things that you said this report would say were in there, and in fact, the ramifications are somewhat important.
Thank you very much. Thanks for acknowledging that. I think the last time we talked about that subject was in April, when they were making a big noise about this. And, you know, the JIS report has been available, not the 28 pages, but the rest of it has been available since 2002, and it started getting attention just a couple years ago. I mean, very few people paid any attention to this. However, what came out from the redacted pages was information that was available from other sources, but it was nice to have it all in one place, and it was also nice to have a sort of government seal of approval. The reason I knew what was going to be in the 28 was because I went to the same primary sources that the Senate did. If you look at it, it's almost exclusively drawing on field office reports from different FBI offices. And it mainly is only talking about a couple of the hijackers. They do mention Atta and al-Shehhi's name, but nothing much and other than, you know, where they stayed in Virginia and something. But Al-Mihdhar and al-Hazmi are the crooks of this. And yeah, there were government officials from Saudi Arabia involved, of course. But really, there was nothing in there that you could not find if you knew where to look. And if you issued a FOIA request, which I have, my desk a little messy, but I have these, you could have read these primary sources yourself. You could have read the FBI field office reports. And then you would also know that, yes, they did include what, here's one, what they said. However, also, there's a lot of those reports that were not in the Senate report, were not redacted, weren't included at all. But what I really like about this is that, yes, I've been vindicated, so what? It's always nice, sort of nice to tell people you told them so, but also not, because it's usually bad news. But if they're going to have this criteria and say that, okay, these are legitimate to go to the FBI field offices and gather information, why wouldn't you? Then you have to include everything else that was in those reports. And they've selectively not included information about Pakistan and Israel. They only said partial information about Saudi Arabia. And it took them 14 years before they would finally admit things. And I think the only reason they did was because, like you said, if you really wanted this info, it had already been leaked all over the place anyway. Especially about Osama Basnan and Omar Bayoumi. That's sort of the juiciest part of the 28 pages, is that it goes to Bandar Bush, because this is what the Democrats are excited about, is, you know, his nickname is Bush, and they're anti-Bush more than they are pro-justice or anything. It's just, oh, yeah, see, it went to the President Bush, and President Bush is a monster, blah, blah, blah. Sure, he is, but he's not much different from an Obama or a Hillary or any of them.
Now, wouldn't you agree, though, that when you're talking about Democrats are happy about this, we're talking about a lot of the congressional Senate Democrats. We're also talking about a lot of the rank and file, that is your average Joe Democrat. But isn't it also true that the Clinton crime family is deeply connected and embedded with the Bush crime family?
Yes, that's what's so hilarious about it. But, you know, these people have a way of just ignoring what they don't want to hear. And you know, they see everything like that with tunnel vision. And, you know, the front runner, like him or not or anything, the front runner for the Republicans, he's not the front runner, he's the nominee now, is Donald Trump. And Donald Trump swore up and down that he would release the 28 pages immediately. So, I mean, would he flip-flop on that? He does often flip-flop, you know, within the same sentence. But he said he released the 28, and I think he was sincere about that, at least. He seems to be hardcore against al-Qaeda, and he was baffled. You saw him in the primaries taking Jeb Bush to the woodshed, saying you can't fight a war in Syria by aiding moderate rebels. You can't fight two fronts. It's ridiculous. You're going to be stuck there 15 years. You're wasting money, yada, yada. He's very blunt about it. Doesn't have a lot of tact, but he was correct on that day anyway. And so it's the Republicans that wanted to release the 28 pages. So the Democrats are happy because, yes, it goes back to a Bush lackey. But they're ignoring all the other information in there that is also important. It wasn't just Bandar Bush.
And of course, Obama and the Democratic Party establishment has been 100% committed to the very same alliance with Israel and to Saudi Arabia that Republicans and neocons have. In fact, of course, as you've talked about before, the first thing Obama did coming into office when he put his cabinet together was basically migrate all of Bush's people right into his administration.
Yeah, I mean, he had Robert Gates from Iran-Contra become his defense guy. So, and a lot of the Iran-Contra people were, you know, when Bush was vice president, the senior, and they, some of those, the younger ones, the Wolfowitzes, and some of those ended up in the Bush Jr. administration. I mean, they also recycle things. I mean, Cheney's chief of staff with Louis Libby, who was, you know, pardoned by Bill Clinton. This guy, he was a lawyer for the Mossad, and he was for Mark Rich, by the way, who got, you know, financed Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign. So, and his girlfriend was Judith Miller, who was one of the primary architects of the Iraq War. She lied about aluminum tubes and you know, mobile weapons labs and all of that. But she went to jail for 85 days, but over the Valerie Plame affair, not over her lies about Iraq. But I still take it as a win.
Let me ask you this. What is your sense of the impact of the release of 28 pages in a couple of different vectors? I want you to talk about briefly, one, how has the mainstream media reported on this, and what is your criticism about that or your observations about that? Secondly, how has the rest of the so-called alternative media sphere looked at this? And number three, what sort of impact do you think this will have in terms of the mass public exposing the corruption of the system?
Well, it's going to take like what we're doing to sort of steer the public in the right direction, because the mass media is a joke. There were some reports in written press that did go over and say, yeah, some of these things were available, and yes, okay, went to Bandar Bush, but they've been exonerated. There's a lot of coincidental or circumstantial evidence, but nothing concrete. But that's ridiculous. I mean, Omar Bayoumi met these hijackers right when they arrived and got them an apartment and was living with them and sending them money. And you can see how, why are you laundering money if it's innocent? And it's nonsense. And then the alternative media, well, also with the mass media, you had the coup in Turkey, and I don't want to get sidetracked into that mess, but that kind of quickly replaced the 28, like less than a day had gone by, and then this incident happens, and that's the news, and no one's talking about 9/11 anymore.
And there was the crazy thing that happened in Nice just the day or so before.
Right, and then, yes, there was the truck bombing, or not bombing, but ramming over people in Nice. So you had the attack in France, and then you had the Turkish coup, and so the 28, and those are big stories, they're legitimate big stories, but the timing was just like that, and kind of got buried. And alt media, same thing. They focus on these other stories and just blah, blah, Saudi Arabia. And I'm like, okay, yes, like I'm not defending Saudi Arabia at all. Like even without 9/11, it's a horrible state. They treat women like property. They stone people to death and fine. But you have to look at the greater picture and say, okay, I've been telling you these things about Al-Shehi, about Al-Midhar, about Al-Hazmi, about all the intermediaries and how they laundered the money and who. There was some stuff in the 28 that I didn't have about this naval officer, and they redact the whole section. So I was like, that's how far I got too. And so I'd like that section to be released too. But for me
– And how deep is this? I mean, how deep does this go? I mean, you've got – of course, the state of Israel, which is committed not only to regional hegemony in the Levant in the Middle East, or committed to, looks like, hell-bent on destroying countries like Iran, countries like Syria. Then you've got the Saudis. Nominally, they're Muslim. And I know your audience is well aware of some of these sectarian divides, but it looks like this is being motivated by something else, not sectarianism. Isn't this a little strange at this point? I mean, this is the year 2016, and it looks like we've been on this carousel for going on 20 years with this. What's the deal?
Well, you see, like, something happened in 1976, and this is when George Bush Sr. was the DCI of the CIA, the director. And first, they're coming off the tales of Watergate in 73, and so the War Powers Act is passed the same year. And then you got the uprising and Wounded Knee and all this. By 1976, you've got something else happens. Now, the Safari Club's created, but it's created also on the tales of the Clark Amendment. And the Clark Amendment is forbidding foreign aid to proxy forces and paramilitary. And at the time, the U.S. is messing with Angola, and they can't get it done. And so they use Israel, Israel and the U.S. have had this secret relationship since 63. Something happened in November 63. And they end up becoming the new middleman in Angola. So people know about Israel and the U.S. working together during the Contra affair. But prior to the 80s, 4 years before that, before the Contra and October surprise, the Israelis were working with the U.S. in Africa. And George Bush Sr. started looking at other sources, and he wanted to break the OPEC oil monopoly because after Yom Kippur, Saudi Arabia really punished the United States. They had a gas shortage in the 70s. People who lived through that were waiting in lines, and it was terrible. It was the joke in Austin Powers. Oh, he didn't miss much. It was a gas shortage and this thing. But that did happen, and he said, well, the biggest oil reserves in Saudi Arabia, they need them. They also need them to up oil production to hurt the Soviet Union at the time and even Russia now because they're a huge oil exporter. And so lowering the price hurts the Russians, none of it. So there are different reasons for the Cold War to ally with Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia becomes the new hub. Plus, George Bush Sr. already has deep business connections with the Saudi royal families and the bin Ladens, all of them. And so as the director of CIA, he meets the GID, the General Intelligence Director of Saudi Arabia. It's like their CIA. And they set up this thing called the Safari Club. And it starts by messing with countries in Africa. But they also, the same year, create BCCI, which is the main bank where the mainstay of all the money laundering for proxy forces for the CIA are going to come through this. And it was very important that they have this because they'd lost Vietnam. They lost the narco money from the Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam was the heroin traffic and opium. And so you're just moving from the Golden Triangle to the Golden Crescent, flip-flopping around. And so you go to Afghanistan, which is where the new heroin is, the new narco money to finance the CIA. And this is not just me like saying this in a kind of general way. I mean, specifically, Ted Shackley had set up with transport companies to move heroin and move money from the heroin trade to this bank in Australia. Ted Shackley, the blonde ghost, was the station chief in Miami and then Laos, a CIA lackey that was involved in the Kennedy assassination. And so he becomes Israel's main mole. Because James Jesus Angleton is out, and they did a purge in the CIA. But Shackley was still their guy, and he becomes an important figurehead in this new Safari Club adventure. So George Bush Sr. has a personal account in BCCI. And now it's not a secret or anything. I mean, there's the movie Charlie Wilson's War. I mean, they go in and say, yeah, we financed the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. Yes. I mean, and it's not like the Soviets didn't know. But this was the new way that America can get around the Clark Amendment and get around the War Powers Act and say, well, we're not doing it. It's ISI. It's GID. It's Saudis. It's the Pakistanis. But they're doing it.
So they offshored this work.
Yeah, you're offshoring work and you're laundering money through a bunch of Saudi banking enterprises. That's it. Now, the bank is physically in Pakistan, but whatever. It's Saudi. It was organized by their royal family. And so they keep this very close and in-house. It's not even the Saudi government. None of these are really governments. I mean, intelligence agencies have quasi-independence, really. I mean, they work for multinational corporate conglomerates. And, yes, they get – some of their money is coming from government, like Congress approves money, like the CIA is paid. But most of their black budget money is coming from narco traffic and fake madrasas and English schools and all these, different ways of organized crime, basically, these syndicates. And they work with actual organized crime to move this drug money around and pay for proxy forces. And a lot of it's from the royals. And, I mean, even with ISIS today, everybody knows that's a proxy force. They're mercenaries. That's not some organic Syrian rebellion. I mean, that's laughable. It's not conspiracy. You know,
now, the argument, and to press you on this a little bit, and kind of to zoom out and look at some of the philosophical or moral questions here, a lot of people would say, you know, right, all of this is true, and certainly, you know, these are instances, or rather a pattern, in fact, endemic corruption and more. But wouldn't people say, you know, if the United States wasn't doing this, it would be someone else? If the United States were to pull out from, say, these nefarious practices, this would create like a vacuum, which some other world power might fill in and step into the shoes and start to assume control of these still existing networks. I mean, you've got to, we must recognize that in terms of the drug trade, that they've created networks of dealers, networks of addicts. You know, it goes very deep. It's in every town and municipality all over the world. You have corrupt police chiefs who allow these to come in. We've got, of course, the notorious drug kingpin, Bill Clinton, who, as governor of Arkansas, would, you know, wave in the planes with the National Guard directly and work, you know, I guess with Pepe Escobar and all those guys. So, you know,
Pablo Escobar.
Did I say Pepe Escobar?
Yeah, I know, because you're thinking of Pepe, but he would be shocked to know that he ran the cartel. Pablo Escobar, the Colombians were pushing through, and then the Cali Sioux through Miami also, in Miami, New Orleans, right, and Arkansas. But, yeah, absolutely. But see, you know, when they want to shut it down, they can. Like before the coup in Chile, they completely knocked out narco traffic. So it can exist only because they allow it. I mean, without these governments, and the U.S. is the big one. I mean, they had the FBN, like, they were the winners of World War II. And the reason that, you know, all these black markets got a giant boost in, especially in like Italy, France, and because even though they won World War II, France had been conquered and decimated. Italy was on the losing side. Japan was on the losing side. Germany. And so you get these huge black markets. Then the Eastern Yakuza thing is a little separate in its targets, but plenty of drug money coming from them. And then the Italians, the organized crime was a U.S. ally during World War II. Giovesi was a liaison. All these Sicilian mobsters that they make all the movies about and stuff, they were allied because they were a rival to Mussolini. And so it was sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but they didn't clean it up afterward. And so there were mobsters placed in control as mayors and governors in townships all throughout Italy. So
the Calabrian mob, they work closely with the Albanian mob, and in fact, they're intermarried.
Well, you had the French connection, Lucky Luciana. And so these New York families are mainly Italian, and suddenly they've got basically state sponsorship. And the same thing with the Jewish mafia after the newly created Zionist state by the Jewish agency in Palestine, now Israel. They get a helping hand from a mother state, like a state. So that it's not just a businessman or something. They're getting state sponsorship. And then very quickly, these mobs are ethnocentric. And so the Jewish and Italians take over territory from Chicago to New York. And then those cities take LA and LA and
Las Vegas.
Bugsy Siegel was sent over to Los Angeles. But Bugsy Siegel started getting in the casino business. And of course, Jimmy Hoffa's paying with that, with the pension money he ripped off. And that's all interesting story. But you see these guys, Sam Giancana, Santos Traficante, they are working with the very newly formed CIA. The mob was bigger and more organized and older than the OSS or CIA, much older. The State Department used to run the heroin back and forth. Not that they don't now, but they had the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, but it was this tiny outfit, and they really didn't know what they were doing. And J. Edgar Hoover is, you know, basically blind to chasing communists. That's, he didn't care about drugs and things. And so when they found an alliance with the mob, when Batista was out and Fidel came to power in Cuba, the mafia is losing over $1 billion a year in the 60s. I don't know what that would be today, but a lot more than $1 billion.
Now, I don't want you to give away too much of the juice from your upcoming documentary.
Oh, well, for JFK. Well, okay. Well, yeah. Put it this way. These people have this relationship already going as the CIA's beginning. And the CIA is not that old. I mean, okay, you got Ted Shackley. He goes through. I mean, it's only like the second generation of guys. And so many of the same people involved with financing the Mujahideen, which is Osama bin Laden, by the way, because Al-Qaeda is just the database of privateers. And it was sort of they used to call them the foreign fighters in Afghanistan. They had a bunch of nicknames, but now they're Al-Qaeda anyway. But I mean, it's not just them. It's MEK. It's been Jandala in Baluchistan.
Right, exactly.
All these things. But BCCI was where they were pumping all the money in. When that bank got in trouble in the 90s, they went right back to Riggs, which was Riggs Bank was the original bank thieves, which you and I discussed last April. I said that, you know, that Turki bin Fasil's and Bandar were using Riggs Bank. Their wives were passing money through there to Madrid Dalcut and blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly what they did. Riggs is the traditional bank. Riggs is who set up the Federal Reserve. Everyone knows the Jekyll Island story and Senator Aldrich and blah, 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 because there have been films about it. Basically, you've got Bill Still and then The Creature in Jekyll Island and books and things. And so but they're kind of starting the story in the middle because the senators didn't write all that up while they were in Georgia. That was given to them by Riggs. And Riggs is the CIA's bank. Well, becomes the CIA's bank. Before that, it's the State Department, which was, you know, overtaken. Then you had FBN, and then the CIA overtakes and so on. But we've always used narco money since the late 20s onward. It's been a bit major deal. And so, yeah, all this gets incorporated. And so when you see these Iran-Contra guys being involved and you see the states that were involved, you have Saudi Arabia and Israel, principal states. But what shocks me is they've already established the criteria that these FBI field office reports are legitimate and this is the information. And yeah, they redacted it, but now they're admitting it. And they're saying, here are the reports from the FBI, and this is solid, you know, lantern jaw FBI agents went and dug up this financial information. They have it. I'm like, all right, I agree. But how come you're just reading these reports on the two hijackers out west and not the 17 hijackers in the east? Why aren't you reading the field office reports from Miami, New Jersey, and New York? They have Phoenix and Portland and even Denver, and it's all in the 28 pages. I read those. I said all that stuff. But the bulk of the information is in these East Coast FBI regional offices, which is where I dug up all this information on the dancing Israelis. That's the nickname. They weren't all dancing. And the art students, which is straight from the FBI. It's boring, but you can go read it. It's not secret or anything. And then, of course, there's the case in Memphis and the case in New York City, where I have letters from the district attorney in New York talking about Sergei Davidenko and Cornell, who got arrested illegally hiring people for fire prevention services in the World Trade Centers. And beyond that, they also faked their entire business because their reference letters about fire suppression, heating, and plumbing were faked. And got caught. The underlings went to jail and everything. Like just like Bernard Carrick went to jail for fraud, dealing with the fucking mafia, and with the Gambino family. And I'm not even gonna say who. Right. I like to go to New York again in my future, but somebody. And he also got a huge bribe from Ertheim Wertheimer of the Jewish Agency. He's on the board of governors. He's a billionaire, so he's really the lead guy. And that's the guy who sent the Israelis, the dancing Israelis, over there to begin with. And so you got this hard thinking. It's like Bernard Carrick, the police commissioner of New York, who's admitting finding the vans and arresting people. But, oh, there's no explosives. And he never says Israelis. He always says Middle Easterners. And it's gotten to the point where even Donald Trump and other people are ignorantly saying, oh, the Muslims were celebrating in New Jersey. Because they hear Middle Easterners and they assume, well, it must be Muslims because that's what attacked us. But it wasn't Muslims. They were Zionist Jews. I don't care what the religion is, but let's be accurate. They're from Israel.
Right. It's a play on our conceptions because while Israel is in the Middle East, that's not what we mean when we say that.
Right.
So let me direct this question to you as we wrap this up today. Now, moving forward, we've got the 28 pages. A lot of the stuff members of Congress had already been privy to. Does this set anything up that can open the door for a more public political prosecution? And is there a lack of political willpower? Obviously, we have, of course, we've got the situation where we've got them, they're policing themselves. So
yeah, like the email scandal with Hillary. She's like, "Oh, you didn't find anything." Eric Holder.
And the FBI is not going to do shit. So
Eric Holder.
Right.
Eric Holder was involved in Oklahoma City bombing with the Clintons. So of course he's not going to after Hillary Clinton. I mean, duh.
Right. Right.
That's what they're for, to whitewash things. But not every FBI agent is like a lot of the lower brass. You can't control the whole thing. Like CIA. Like you just bottleneck the key positions. That's all you really need. But there are some pissed off police and FBI people. I've talked to them. They want me to say this shit.
I mean, they must be frustrated because, I mean, I have a different view of the state and law enforcement and stuff like that. But I do respect, or rather, I do understand that a lot of people might come from different parts of the U.S. and they might have, you know, just had, I don't know, family members, or they might be naive and then they kind of get involved because they want to be one of the good guys and, you know, chase down the bad guys. And then they, you know, over a short period of time, they quickly realize how corrupt it really is. And they kind of want to
corrupt, especially for the beat cops and stuff when they go around shooting people's dogs and all that. But I'm talking about the detectives, like regular cops
about the detectives,
are required to have low IQ and all that. But we do need some actual detectives for when, you know, when rich people get robbed. So they got to have real police, right? So that's what they're for. Like, oh, silly peasant, you know, the laws only apply to poor people. And that's true to an extent. But I think in a way, yeah, you can look at Hillary's email scandal and like, okay, yeah, the FBI is not going after her. But that doesn't mean she's not going to get prosecuted by public opinion. Like, everybody knows what she's doing, and that is going to hurt her. She is going to lose votes from that. I don't know if she'll lose enough. I hope so. But that's going to haunt her for a long time, and it's also bad in a way because, you know, foreign states have a lot of this information from her stupid BlackBerry, and they'll be able to hold leverage on her. But she doesn't care because she's not American. Like, she doesn't care about America. She cares about herself.
And while people may debate whether or not Trump is like the Republican version of Obama, making big promises, looking like he's a dark horse coming as a non-systemic outsider, and of course, personally, I don't trust anyone as far as I can throw him. But in reality, you know, we have, of course, a situation where Hillary Clinton is already a war criminal at large. I mean, she's already responsible for the murder of countless people, and she's obviously you know, way more vested in on certain levels where it counts. I'm not saying that Trump isn't a Zionist. I'm not saying that Trump isn't tight with bankers. I'm not saying any of that. He's open about this, in fact. But when we look at someone like Hillary Clinton, clearly mentally unstable, clearly, you know, psychopath, sociopath.
I mean, she supported UN sanctions after it was already known that hundreds of thousands of little kids were starving to
died
death.
Without,
She doesn't care.
No, it's,
so, like,
you know,
whatever Trump has said, whatever offensive thing he's ever done out of saying, you know, it can't compare to her crimes. And there have been a lot of businessmen, you know, Vince McMahon, Dana White, et cetera, where Trump has legitimately invested in small or big and whatever he believed in and does want to help American enterprise, sincerely. Is he a jerk? Yeah, he is. But Hillary is a psychopath. And there's a big difference between someone who's a jerk and someone that laughs about little kids starving to death.
Right.
She literally is, ha, 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 you know, we turned Libya upside down and gave it to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, we came, we saw he died, ha, ha, right. No, well,
and the State Department was running guns to what becomes ISIS through the FSA. And she knew that because she's a Secretary of State. And if she didn't know that, that's even worse because she's completely incompetent and deaf cheap.
I mean, when we look at 28 pages, this is just, you know, one very, very small chapter in a whole book, in a whole library of crimes. And I'm not talking about even things that aren't crimes. Some of these things are perfectly legal. They're systemic. They cover them up, but they may not be illegal because they also write the laws. So, you know, I feel like we're between a rock and a hard spot here. You know, could you tell us, as we wrap up today, what is it you want your audience to take from this, and what is it you want them to go out and do?
Well, for one, I want specifically the 9/11 victims' families need to continue to pursue to sue Saudi Arabia. And, you know, prior to the 28 being released, my congressman, Walter Jones, had co-sponsored a bill to get it unredacted. that helped put the pressure on there. And I actually flew to DC and lobbied, and we had 22 co-sponsors. But what was shocking is, as you mentioned before, this was available to congressmen if they wanted it. They could go apply and go read it in a soundproof room, and they couldn't take notes, but they could go see it. And yet very few of them did. But the ones who did all signed the bill, right? Only 22, but it was enough. That kind of stuff, if you'd said 5 years ago, are they going to release the 28? Most people would say, no, it doesn't right. look like it. But you get a couple guys like Thomas Massey or Walter Jones who, it only takes a couple congressmen who have somewhat of a conscience to bring this up, and then the public's already there, but they feel like, oh, we're powerless. But if you get a couple guys in Congress to listen to you, and they're not all horrible, 99% maybe, but you just need one or two, you can start to get this process rolling and put the pressure on it and get the 28 released. I would like to know what was on the computer hard drives that were confiscated from Urban Moving Systems. I've wanted to know that for a very long time. I've basically dug as far as I can without subpoena power and money as right. I'm going to get on 9/11.
Right. You put in your FOIA request.
Yeah, I got my FOIA request, and I sat there and I compared police reports and news reports and played Rosetta Stone, like the actual Rosetta Stone, where you have different languages and so you can match them. So you just count the spaces, see how many letters are in this guy's name, and do a lot of deduction. And it's kind of fun and kind of sucks at the same time. But, as you're finding stuff out, it's like, it's rewarding in a way. But, yeah, I mean, the thing is, you put all this out there and it kind of gets lost. 9/11 to me is very important, because without that, I don't think you could have had a war in Iraq. This whole chain of events wouldn't have happened. And so it's key for me to get people to understand what they did. And Syria is very important to me. All these things are important. But 9/11 is the catalyst that launched all of this. And they got to know how we jointly work with other countries' intelligence agencies to manufacture these things. And, George Tenet and Richard Blee and Kofor Black and these guys in the counterintelligence wing definitely suppressed information. And that relates directly to the 28. And I said this in The Empire Unmasked, and I released a little snippet the other day on YouTube about this with the floating text. We know from Private Manning's leaks that the CIA knew that Al-Hazmi and Al-Mihdhar had met Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in an al-Qaeda summit meeting in Malaysia and followed them all the way to the U.S., and they did not share that information with the FBI or anyone else. And they knew they're going to flight schools and everything else. So when you get these generic warnings about bin Laden attacking, how can you not know that airplanes will probably be involved when people at the al-Qaeda summit meeting are going to flight schools? And, best case scenario, maybe the CIA was trying to flip them and get a guy inside al-Qaeda. No, I don't follow that, because when you look at the other information from Able Danger and other things where they had Atta and his groups, the residents, phone numbers, everything in Hamburg, Germany before they even got to the United States and didn't do anything. It's not incompetence. It's not, we were trying to get a mole. They're shielding. They wanted this operation to be successful.
They wanted it to go down.
They right. let it happen, and they used foreign proxies to finance.
Thoughts. 15 seconds, your concluding thoughts, brother.
I don't want people to get sucked into the 9/11 kook movement, the Alex Jones's stuff saying hijackers are still alive or a missile hit the Pentagon or anything. Don't get stuck into that. Don't get dragged into arguing endlessly about how the buildings fell too quickly, or you don't need to split hairs about physics and stuff when we have this huge paper trail. And other people have done this work, so just let them speak. You need to start supporting people who have proven themselves correct and not get stuck in this nonsense when it comes to the 9/11. The other issues seem to be more clear. The Iraq war is pretty much, we won that battle. Everybody knows it weren't WMDs. We have all been vindicated. Syria is starting to come around that corner, I think, just like Iraq, a little quicker. Syria, people know it's proxy forces. They know the Turks, the Saudis. They know the whole thing. But the Israeli role always squeaks out the side. And mm-hmm. that's what people have to understand. Israel is absolutely central on why we're in Syria and why we invaded Iraq. That was the Office of Special Plans. That was their war. And you cannot be afraid of someone accusing you of being anti-Semitic or something. Oh, come on. Like, it's got nothing to do with that. This is a state. They have their own interests, and they're involved in this. And so I hope people will, you know, you got to fight them on multiple fronts. That's why I'm going to Los Angeles to screen this film about Palestine. You're like, well, how does that relate to Syria or anything? Well, it does, because undermining the Israelis pulls the rug out from all of it. And the less people have fear to criticize them, the more some of these FBI agents and detectives and stuff will have, come, you know, forward. Be willing to come forward or leak it to someone else and get that info out there. I hope that right. The victims' families can sue the Saudis. And people are like, it wasn't just the Saudis. Why? Like, but so what? The Saudis mm-hmm. are awful. Take them right. down one at a time. You know, let's be practical here. You know, take right. that. Right. Like, take out as a win. And that doesn't mean you have to give up on the rest of it. But if you're waiting to get them all at the same time, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, not going to happen.
No.
Rye, thank you so very much. We're talking about 28 pages today. The things that Rye said was going to happen went down that way. Things that were included was what he said it would be. Why? Because he did the research. Why? Because it was all known. It was all out there. We're hoping that folks here and today will take matters into their own hands, will get behind the ANC project. PayPal's down below. Please, folks, just a couple of dollars goes a long way. I'm very serious about this. You know what? Turn off that ad blocker too, because independent media can't survive. No one's given money. It's not coming from China. Definitely not coming from America. Not coming from Russia.
That, this is those ads go to my son's college future. So all that AdSense goes right into a bank that I never touched.
Everyone's got to eat. It's not a crime to eat. And the contributions that you make allow this research to go down. Folks, that's all we have today.
Also, it costs a lot less to tell the truth than it does to deceive, and that's how we can beat them, because we don't need millions of dollars like that. Yeah, and if you don't know how to issue a FOIA, you know, just Google it. How do I write my own FOIA? There's plenty of information that you really can get from the Freedom of Information Act. Yeah, some of it will be redacted, but I would hope more of you, if you're serious and you're really going to read it and all, because don't overburden them with this stuff, but if you want these reports, ask me. Like, I've published all the Dancing Israeli documents, RNA and C. If you want these raw documents, if you have the time, or you have some ebook reader that'll read it to you, if you're fancy, some people have these things. I think I wish I had known that a few years ago.
right.
Just ask, you know, and it's not rocket science. It's just mindoksai, we say in Japanese, kind of tedious stuff, but it's out there. And, you know, we're expanding ANC. I don't take sensationalists on board. You know, we've got a lot of nice members coming up, newsletter coming up. So join Patreon, shoot a couple dollars in. You know, it supports the films, the screenings, the research, everything under this umbrella. And I really think we're turning a corner on Syria. And so I want to keep the ball rolling and keep that going. And you and I will have to talk about Turkey another time, because we skipped it. But that coup was quite interesting. And I want to actually flip around and ask you about that as well. So.
Great. Well, we've got an agenda. Thanks again for having me. Thanks for answering my questions. I think your listeners and your viewers definitely appreciate it. We're wrapping up our ANC show right now. Folks, 28 pages. Look at the links below and look at our talk from April. Rye laid it all out then. Mm-hmm. And here we are basically saying, you know, it went down the way we thought. So, Rye, thank you very much. And we are out.
Thank you.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Yeah. Take it back to 47 before your inception, before the terror lives lost in the US weapons, before the foreign aid, 10 mil a day, Holocaust always the excuse that they say. But look at Gaza, tell me no genocide. Hamas rockets do nothing, retaliation to children dying. Got no right to defense when you occupy the seas, the people, water, earth, and the sky. You target civilians, human shields a lie. Now you scream insults as Roger Waters on our side. UN resolutions yet, prohibit solution, puppet support, draw public conclusions. Now I'm seeing the world as Palestinian youth. So verbal rocks firing at your troops. I'ma send my salute to all my fam seeing the truth. Gonna break your siege like flotillas with food. We gotta end AIPAC and free Palestine. I said end AIPAC, free, free Palestine. Do it for the millions slowly down. Do it for the souls martyred all the time. End AIPAC, free, free Palestine. End AIPAC, free, free Palestine. Like what they done before, what we saw in the apartheid state. Drop the war, abolish AIPAC, it's a global